This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero in Friedrichshafen, Germany. Today, I'm speaking with Pat Waddick of Cirrus. We had a press conference this morning. Congratulations. You are within hours of flying production one of the SF-50 Vision jet. Tell us about that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the CAPS program for the Cirrus jet.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. To your point, it's a pretty exciting time at Cirrus. So we're nearing the end of the certification program, and it's pretty neat for the team to transition from certification into maybe what's a harder task, which is ramping up production. Of course, a hallmark of Cirrus is not just innovation, but being able to make a lot of very high quality airplanes. So as we proceed with not only what we affectionately call P1 for production unit number one, which is our type rating training company owned airplane, but we progress to the second and the third. Those get into customer aircraft. Those are in process as well today. And we look forward to flying that first airplane, but then moving on past certification and into that initial delivery period. So the certification process, these are complex programs. There's a lot in them, but you know, I'm really happy to report it's been really a highly successful program, just a lot to do. So we're in the final stages of type inspection authorization flight testing, TIA flight testing, which we started last August. In fact, here we are sitting around the third week of April of 2016, and by the end of April, we'll probably be through all of the rest of the TIA, which really only is a couple of things, including the automatic flight control system TIA testing. After that, we move into function and reliability testing, FNR testing, and the FAA, of course, is involved with all this, also flying the aircraft. And that really just flies the aircraft in all sorts of different environmental conditions, different mission profiles, and just gives us that final feedback before we start delivering airplanes. So it's an exciting time, and we're looking forward to next
steps. And we're looking for deliveries in the fall, is that right?
Well, we're still looking for getting all of our submittals for certification by the end of Q2. And then after that, the FAA has to finish their job. And we can't start deliveries until after we have type certification. What I can say is that after we get type certified, in that first full year after getting type certified, you know, our plan has been to produce about 50 aircraft during that period, and then get to a one per week rate, and then stabilize there, make sure that we're lean and have a stable system, and then look toward higher rates as high as 125 annually. Obviously, we have over 600 people that have been patiently waiting for their jets. But what they want more than fast is they want it right. And so we got the responsibility to, while we have plans, to make sure that we're just proceeding in a methodical way that just builds great airplanes.
And so when is the first delivery then, do you expect?
I don't know. It's going to be probably shortly after type certification. And there's things that are in our control and things that are out of our control. One of the things that's not in our control is the work that's done on the FAA side of it, and they've got their job to do. And when they're done with that and we have type certification, then we'll move on to the next steps.
We talked about the CAPS testing for the Vision jet. It's a way different set of circumstances than the SR-22. The SR-22 deployed in actual flight conditions a number of times. It has been used in anger a number of times. I think I said it was a little over 70 deployments. The Vision jet, because of the speeds involved, is entirely different. So it's unlikely that you're going to do tests on that in the actual flight envelope, at least in multiples. I know you showed a video of it being dropped as a mock-up, but where will testing go from here on out with the CAPS for the Vision jet?
Yeah, you know, it really is a very different set of circumstances. With the SR series aircraft, of course, the thing that we're most proud of is that close to 130 people are with their families today because of that system. And even though both aircraft, you design the airplane around the parachute because it's a fully integrated system, with the SRs, I think the mantra of, you know, pull early, pull often when you see a life-threatening situation is just it's a different situation with the jet. With the SR, we took credit for the existence of the parachute relative to spins. It's a much more reliable outcome than people relying on themselves when they never do spin recovery training. In airplanes that aren't approved for spins, I mean, the statistics don't support that as a good course. With the jet, we've got a different scenario. We have type-rated trained pilots. We have a turbine. While reciprocating engines are highly reliable, turbines are that much more reliable. And you've got even more safety systems in the jet, in the sophistication of the avionics, electronic stability protection. There's all sorts of different aspects in this very holistic approach to safety that takes care of people. But the jet is just one of those many safety systems. With the jet, there's a smaller number of scenarios, consequently, that is kind of the design point. Things like pilot incapacitation. That's just a situation in any airplane that unless you give a non-trained occupant a way to solve that, you don't have many options. Even a second engine isn't going to necessarily help you with that. Fuel starvation continues to be one of the leading causes of mishaps in aviation. And as much as we try to make sure that there's safety systems in the avionics and fuel monitoring, it still occasionally comes up. So while the probability is relatively low, much lower in the jet than other aircraft, that still has a place. And so we designed it around that, and it's a very different operating system. So, of course, you know the jet is up to a 300-knot aircraft. It is a 6,000-pound aircraft, and energy, of course, goes with the square of velocity and directly proportional to mass. That's a lot of energy to manage. And so when we look at the scenarios and we look at the technical issues with managing that energy, we want to make sure we are taking full advantage of what was available to us. One of those things is the automatic flight control system. So when an occupant pulls the handle, they're finding themselves in a life-threatening situation. The autopilot will try to recover the aircraft, and it will try to slow it down. It'll slow it down into a deployment window, and the first thing that happens is there's an airbag underneath this 135-pound packed parachute, and these inflators, there's three individual inflators. The system only needs one. We have that for redundancy, and it pushes this pack out of the nose of the aircraft. There's also a rocket that is sequenced to deploy around the same time. And so that rocket then takes the parachute the rest of the way, and then at that point, the canopy deploys, and it is a very large canopy. It's a 88-foot diameter canopy. The way that I talk about people thinking about that is the wingspan of a Concorde is about, I think it's about 83 to 85 feet. That's a big parachute, 6,000 square feet. But for 6,000 pounds, you need that much to lower the aircraft, roughly at about the same descent rate as under the canopy with the SRs, about 25 feet per second. And then ensure that even with in a touchdown condition, in different ground conditions, that you're keeping the occupants safe from any serious injury. So it's both a different set of design points and a different design and integration to this system.
And also a narrower set of circumstances in which it might be used. And I think, based on my study of the SRs, as you mentioned, a lower probability of it being used because of type-rated pilots and turbines and so forth. It's a higher level of pilot that's going into this.
Exactly.
And your training, as I understand it, it won't be pull early, pull off. It'll be something else.
It will be something else. Again, we have a very formal, really very innovative. You know, you asked about opportunities of innovation in aviation, and training is as much a place for innovation as any other place. And the way we're approaching the type rating program, I think, is going to carry the spirit of innovation there as well. And so we will be spending specific time in the type rating program talking about those scenarios, talking about how best to treat this type of a system when it is able to be effective, and maybe sometimes when maybe it's not.
I'd asked you about the AFC and Autoland capability, and this is a pretty sophisticated AFC with envelope protection, as sophisticated as anything that you've done, I'm sure. So it has to have control of the parachute, and there has to be some overarching logic going on there. How far are we away, do you think, from practical Autoland that the system could figure out which is the better scenario or offer the pilot the better scenario, parachute or Autoland?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, you're well served in, you know, talking directly to some of the avionics manufacturers that are really intimately familiar with the system capability. But when you look at what these systems are capable of, you can surely start envisioning a future where that is a real outcome. And I think it can be. I don't know, you know, exactly when that can happen, but I know that it takes us that step closer to this. When you think of this as a totally integrated safety system, where the system is monitoring exactly what the scenario is, what the airplane is capable of that moment, where it is, and helps the pilot decide what is the best way to deal with that from a safety standpoint. And so I certainly think that there's more innovative things to come in the future. It just makes aviation safer, and ultimately that just helps grow aviation.
With regard to the caps on the jet, since it won't be tested to the same kind of envelope the SRs were, is there an equation there where you worry about liability? The first guy to deploy this will deploy it in circumstances that you hadn't necessarily actually tested?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I have no qualms about, you know, Cirrus has a long history in both developing parachute systems and also a long history in delivering great, high-quality, and safe airplanes. This airplane is thoroughly tested. I think that the amount of test and evaluation on the jet, I'm not sure I can make direct comparisons to the SR, but I think it's reasonable to say that it is an extraordinarily thorough program. You heard today that we've already done several in-flight tests on full-scale airplanes, demonstrating the system capability. But remember, those are even the same as with the SRs, where we did in-flight tests. They're just a couple of candidly nominal test points, which is only a small part of things that you can do to demonstrate to yourself that it's ready for customers. And of course, with our program, we take a building block approach, where we're not just looking at nominal cases, we're looking at all of the different corners of the individual envelope. I talked about some of the redundancy of the system. Another example that highlights that is, you know, the team, when they're looking at the extraction of the parachute out of the nose of the aircraft, not only do we do it in cold temperature conditions, warm temperature conditions, but we also do it looking at, okay, what if we have a failed inflator? What if the airplane is in a multiple G pull-up maneuver where that parachute is not 135 pounds, it's twice that, and what will be the system operation? And you go through and you look at every aspect of the system in really a very thorough way, and that's where you are able to verify that, no, I've demonstrated to myself and to the customers that this is going to perform its intended purpose. So while we get sort of maybe some visceral good feelings about seeing in-flight deployments, and we, as you saw today, we show pictures of that and airplanes under canopy, the substance of the whole program is far more than that. It's all of these different building blocks culminating in the system working together.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the briefing, Pat.
You're welcome. Have a great one.
This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero in Friedrichshafen, Germany. Thanks for listening.
This podcast brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners.